You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests, and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for this next hour, they're going to be the views of William H. Kennedy. And William H. Kennedy is a Catholic. He's a lifelong Catholic, but he's a conservative Catholic. He's very concerned about what's happening in the Catholic Church. In fact, he even wrote a book on Lucifer's Lodge, which went into what was going on in the Catholic seminaries, where often you could not get an appointment unless you were homosexual, and the corruption at so many levels of the Catholic Church dealing with covering up sexual immorality. Well, of course, then he's done a lot of other work. He has an excellent website, WilliamHKennedy.com, but tonight we're going to be talking about Tony Blair. Did you know that Tony Blair is running for president? We hear a lot of people talking about Obama running for president and John McCain running for president. But did you know that Tony Blair, a Fabian socialist, certainly a man who's deeply involved in the occult, is running for president? For the president of the European Union. Now, we're going to be talking about that and about so many other things. It's very difficult for most people who live in the world we live in to believe that there really is a spiritual realm. There are people who are in contact with the beings from the other dimension, with the demonic and angelic beings, but mostly demonic beings today. And of course, that these are influencing the unfolding of political events in the world today. But of course, with Tony Blair, former premier of Great Britain, long-time member of the Fabian Socialist Movement, leader of the Labour Party and the Socialist Movement. Tony Blair was forced to resign from his position in Great Britain, but of course immediately he was transported to a key position in Europe, and now he's running for president of the European Union. William, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me on Radio Liberty again, Dr. Stan. It's always a privilege to be here.
Well, why don't you pick up the story? Because, of course, the significance of what's happening, I'm sure, misses most people. There's been a few little remarks on the Internet about it. But people do not realize the significance of having a man who is deeply involved with the occult as the president of the European Union.
Well, it's quite fascinating, Dr. Stan, when you consider that Tony Blair has just converted to the Roman Catholic Church. He met with Pope Benedict XVI, and he's now running for the presidency, as you said, of the European Union. He was the former Prime Minister of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and he left office not too long ago after a pedophile scandal erupted, wherein a thing called Operation OR, which was the British police's search into online pedophiles, turned up a name of someone on Tony Blair's cabinet as receiving child pornography. What Blair did is he immediately invoked a national security law over there, which halted the investigation of one of his cabinet members for pedophilia. Now, what's quite fascinating is that this ties in with the big pedophile crisis in the Roman Catholic Church. And what people don't realize about that, Dr. Stan, is that one-third of all priests in the world are members of religious orders. Those are things like the Jesuits and the Franciscans and the Dominicans. And what they do is they answer directly to Rome. They're not under a cardinal or an archbishop.
All right, you hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment with William H. Kennedy and... All right, William, you were just saying that about a third of the priests belong to some sort of an order. They do not answer to a cardinal or a bishop. They are answerable directly to Rome. And, of course, aren't the leaders of these orders, like the Jesuits and the Dominicans and the Franciscans, aren't they? Isn't this really sort of a hierarchical study structure? And it's the individual priest doesn't answer. It's the leader of their group that answers to Rome. Would that be correct?
That's correct, and sometimes the leaders of these groups have titles, like they are made cardinals and bishops and things like that, but that's very rare. But what's frightening about them is that whereas a cardinal or a bishop were transferring pedophile priests on the archdiocese level, the religious orders are transferring pedophile priests on an international level. For example, if a priest gets in trouble in Canada, his religious order will transfer him to India or Australia and put him beyond legal reckoning for his actions. And there's a big problem in Great Britain. Now, the biggest problem is with the Franciscans. And mentioning Tony Blair, in England, there's the Franciscan International Studies Center in Canterbury, which is a hotbed of pedophilia. It's run by a fellow named Father Philippe Yates. I call him Philippe the Creep Yates because all sorts of sick Franciscans have been there, including Archbishop John Ward, who was the Archbishop of Cardiff. He was a Franciscan who was made an archbishop, and he is the highest-ranking cleric in the Roman Catholic Church to be charged with ritual abuse. It's said that he raped a six-year-old girl on an altar with a crucifix, which is a really sick and bizarre thing. But this particular center in England, seeing as we're on about Tony Blair, I warn anyone who has anything to do with that place to avoid it, because survivor groups and even the police are monitoring it and taking photographs of people who are going in and out of the place.
Now, what place are you speaking of, William?
This is the Franciscan International Studies Center in Canterbury, England.
All right, fine.
And anyone allied with it, like there's a priest there, Father Peter Geldard, and I'm not saying that Father Peter is a pedophile or supports pedophiles, but just by using their facilities, they are kind of vindicating and supporting pedophiles because they are in and out of there. And I'm just warning people who may be unaware who attend services there that it's not the wisest place to go. There are better Catholic institutions to go than there. But to get back to Tony Blair, now the bizarre thing about Tony Blair is he's a Catholic.
Hold that thought. Sure. We'll be right back with William H. Kennedy. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William was simply talking about the pedophilia within the various orders of the Catholic Church, and these would be the like the Franciscans or Jesuits or elsewhere, and of course everything is done to cover this up. They cannot let the average individual, the average Catholic, realize the degree of depravity that there is certainly within the Catholic Church. Of course, we've got problems in the Protestant Church. I don't know how many of you know that the Archbishop of Canterbury, the leader of the Christian Church in England, has announced we England should really turn to Sharia law. In other words, Muslim law that would replace English law, because of course we wouldn't want the Muslims to feel bad. And the Archbishop of Canterbury has recently announced that England should adopt Sharia or Muslim law, where you can have, you know, four wives, and of course women are stoned for adultery, and that's all part of a what sort of madness is that? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we live in a world gone mad, and there are only a few of us who are sane, and of course the most people think we've got to be crazy because these things could not be going on, but there really are satanic covens all over our society. And if you haven't read William H. Kennedy's excellent book, Satanic Crimes, or heard our four CD set on Satanic Crimes, and they involve certainly every aspect of life, but specifically the churches as well, why they are available for Radio Liberty. But right now we're going to be talking about Tony Blair, who is converted suddenly to the Catholic Church, and now he is running to become the president of the European Union, who will be the most powerful man in Europe, indeed, essentially a dictator, because there is no democratic process within the structure of the European Union, only a massive bureaucracy answerable to the president, and of course, all freedom will soon be lost there. They've united suddenly the economies of the countries of Europe. They have a common currency, the euro, and of course, this is, well, I think Gorbachev put it best, and Gorbachev, former dictator of Russia, should know. He called it the European Soviet. And no, Tony Blair, lifelong socialist, wants to run to become the new president of the European Union. And one of the first things he did, convert to Catholicism, and go right ahead with the story, William.
Well, it's quite bizarre, because when you consider that he's also heavily into the occult. Now, Tony Blair and his wife, Sherry, used to go to a soothsayer named Jack Temple, who was a pendulum dowser. And what they would do is Sherry Blair would take Tony Blair's fingernail clippings and hair, and Jack Temple would perform some sort of magical ritual over it and give him advice about how to run the United Kingdom. That's just absolutely crazy.
And, of course, in the Book of Deuteronomy, we're told to avoid the dowsers of any type, because that, along with the fortune tellers and the mediums and the spiritualists and those people involved with witchcraft and Wiccan and Satanism, certainly they were to avoid. I mean, this goes back to one of the early books of the Bible, but God said, "Don't dabble in this, because you're going to come in contact with these spirits." And well, of course, unfortunately, more and more people are becoming involved with the occult today, including many of the leaders of the world. But go right ahead.
Well, it's very bizarre, because that's not the only thing Tony Blair was involved with. His wife is also a devotee of a woman named Carol Kaplan, who gives her these magical amulets to wear. And Tony Blair even carries with him a very bizarre sort of folded-up piece of cloth with some magical things in it. This is very deranged. And the ultimate thing the Blairs did was in 2001 near Cancun, Mexico, at a hotel that has a big pyramid complex, they met an occultist named Nancy Aguilar, and they went through a very bizarre ceremony wherein they kneeled before four different figures. The first was a sun with lizards around it, which represented the underworld, and then they prayed before a phoenix, a crab, and a serpent. The final thing they prayed before was a serpent. And then they entered the pyramid and smeared themselves with mud and herbs and came out of the pyramid screaming at the top of their voices. This was a symbolic rebirth, and they ran into the ocean and, you know, washed off the mud. But when you really look at it, the last three things they bowed before, the phoenix, the crab, and the serpent, are really a form of the infernal trinity. They're the opposite of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. The phoenix is the opposite of the Holy Ghost, who's symbolized by a dove. The crab is the opposite of the sun, which is represented by a fish. You know, a crab will destroy and eat a fish. And the serpent is, of course, the opposite of God or Lucifer.
Okay, if I could just comment, when William first told me this, my first response was, well, where is the proof? And, of course, it's up on his website. And you can go to his website, williamhkennedy.com, and you'll pull down this one page. And, of course, he's not only got the story, he's got the links in there to places like the London Times and other very reputable publications there in Great Britain have written about all of these things, as well as, of course, many links to the fact that FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, was deeply involved with astrology, as was Richard Nixon, as was Ronald Reagan and his wife, not just Nancy, but Ronald as well. And but of course, we know that Hillary, when she was in the White House, brought in Jean Houston to conjure up the spirits of Eleanor Roosevelt and Mohandas Gandhi. Now, why doesn't anybody talk about that during this race that's on, this political race? The fact that Hillary would bring in a medium to conjure up spirits in the White House, Eleanor Roosevelt, Mohandas Gandhi, this was well known, of course, 8 years ago. Or even 12 years ago, but is never mentioned today, and I wonder why. Go right ahead with it.
Well, it's very bizarre. Barack Obama is also a member of a church which practices African supremacy, and some African occultism is thrown in there, too. So all of these world leaders, you don't have to look very far to find occult connections, and the mainstream media does report on these things, but they put them on the back burner of coverage. For example, it won't be on the front web page of the Times of London. It will be buried back in some minor page or some minor part of the newspaper. But these things are reported by the mainstream media. They're just not given any emphasis. In my page, WilliamHKennedy.com, I've just pulled all of these articles together. And it's very, very bizarre when you see the deep connections. Now, back to Tony Blair. Becoming a Catholic, that makes him allied with the Catholic Church, which is the largest organization on earth. It has over 1 billion members. One in six people is affiliated with the Catholic Church to some extent on this planet. The Roman Catholic Church is the largest holder of gold in the world. It controls one-fourth of the world's gold supply, and it has ornamental gold and bullion in the Vatican. And it also holds gold in Switzerland and New York as well. So it has its gold supply spread out all over the world. Now, when you consider the euro is backed by gold, the U.S. dollar is not backed by anything, but the euro is backed by gold, so that makes the Roman Catholic Church a huge economic player. Now, in December of 2007, the European Union signed the Treaty of Lisbon in Portugal, and what the EU did is they basically decided to make the president of the European Union a super dictator with unlimited powers. Now, Blair is running for that office. He's aligned himself with the Roman Catholic Church, which controls the gold, which backs the euro, and that would make him the closest thing to a global dictator that is out there in the world today, much more powerful than the U.S. president and much more powerful than the president of the Soviet Union or the premier of China. This would be the number one economic and political power in the world, the presidency of the EU. Now, the Treaty of Lisbon hardly got any coverage over here, and it didn't even get that much coverage in Europe. But once they signed that, Tony Blair hopped right in on running for this office. You know, he sided himself with the president of France, who's supporting him. Now, the president of the EU is not elected in a democratic election. He is chosen by the leaders of the members of each state. So they pick people who were prime ministers and things like that. They choose one of their own in a parliamentary system. So the average European will have no say in who the president of the EU is. And it just becomes more and more frightening because Tony Blair, in his first speech running for the presidency of the EU, kept repeatedly bringing up terrorism and responding to terrorism. Now, under the Treaty of Lisbon, the president of the European Union is given even much more power than the President of the United States to institute martial law and things of that nature. So we're looking at a super global despot in the office of the Presidency of the European Union. Now, I'm not saying that Tony Blair is the Antichrist, if you want to think of this in European terms, But if you read 1 John, you will see there will be a series of antichrists before the final one. And what he's doing is setting up the structure for the final antichrist.
And, of course, a very evil and wicked man. I mean, the people of Great Britain hated Tony Blair. That's why he had to resign. And of course, he turned it over to one of his friends, Mr. Gordon Brown. But here's a man deeply involved in the occult, and you're not reading about it in your newspapers. Why is that? In fact, most of the things we talk about here on Radio Liberty, if they do get into the newspapers at all, they're on page 39 under the pot roast ad, and they're only there for one day and never mentioned again. But, of course, this is why we do what we do, because we're pointing out we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Well, William, go right ahead.
Well, when you consider that the superpower that Tony Blair is seeking will herald an eventual global dictator. Now, a lot of people, friends of mine who aren't Christian and don't want to talk in Christian terms, that's absolutely fine. You don't have to call this coming figure the Antichrist if you don't want to. You can call him a global dictator, but it will amount to the same thing as the Antichrist. It doesn't matter what you call this figure. The economic and political structure for this super force leader to be installed in Europe is coming up very quickly. Now, as kind of a historian of Roman Catholicism, my academic background is in philosophy and economics, but I will look a little bit at other things at times, but when you really look at it, this superstructure, this office, it's quite bizarre. It fits right into what will be a global leader with complete control of the economy and the complete control of a worldwide military force. People used to think the United Nations would be this ultimate superstructure, but it really won't be. It'll be the presidency of the EU. And within the Roman Catholic Church and Roman Catholic history, there is one group that sought to bring this about. It was called the Golden Veil. And it eventually died out in the 1920s because its younger members died in World War One. This was a French movement, and many of its younger members were killed off in the war. But basically what they wanted to do was form an international Roman Catholic government with one of the Habsburgs as the king and the Pope as the real leader. Now, they were very bizarre because they wanted to absorb Freemasonry and occultism into this Catholic group, and they wanted to start doing this by unifying Europe under a single leader and a single economic system. So I suspect that a great deal of this is some sort of carryover of this group, the Golden Veil, which died out, as I said, in the 20s. The last major thing they did is they bought about the Feast of Christ the King, which is a Catholic feast day which celebrates the sovereignty of Jesus Christ as ruler of the universe. But then it allegedly died off, but I think it has somehow resurrected, for lack of a better term, in Tony Blair and other people who are seeking the super powerful office. And as I said, when you consider that Tony Blair went through that bizarre ritual in Cancun, Mexico, and you know, Dr. Stan, I don't blame people for not, you know, believing me offhand when I tell them that bizarre story, because it sounds crazy, but it was reported by the Times of London on December 15th in 2001. It sounds absurd. It sounds like something I made up, but it's absolutely true. And it's very, very bizarre because Tony Blair was showing his allegiance to this infernal trinity, this serpent or whatever it is. And what that was just putting out a message to the other occult elite world leaders that he was on the rise and looking for more power and was aligning himself with Lucifer. Now, it's very, very strange. Like you mentioned Ronald Reagan earlier. Ronald and Nancy Reagan...
Hold that thought. Sure. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William H. Kennedy is our guest today. If you haven't read his book, A Lucifer's Lodge, it's out of print now. You could probably get it through Amazon. We carried it when it was available. We'll be coming back in print, and of course, William is planning on getting a video of that or a DVD of that. But we do carry his book on satanic crimes, and we have a four-tape set or four-CD set on satanic crimes, which are really very important. But certainly William was talking about, you know, this idea that, you know, there is a trinity of evil. And certainly as we have a trinity of holiness, the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, you have to understand that there is a counterpart in the occult. And that would be Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet, because everything that the people on the other side do is a mirror image of Christianity. I mean, certainly the Satanists have a black mass, and of course they perform all sorts of horrible ceremonies on, you know, on altars in Catholic churches. If you have ever read Malachi Martin's book, the last book that he wrote, escapes my mind, Windswept House.
Windswept House. Right.
Of course, he tells about how there was this satanic ceremony, a feigned human sacrifice in the basement of the Vatican. But actually, it was time to correspond with a real human sacrifice, and the people in the basement of the Vatican were in touch with the people who were forming the real human sacrifice. And I talked to Father Malachi, who was a Jesuit priest, a confidant of Pope John Paul XXIII, talked to him before he died, and he confirmed that this had really taken place. In fact, we know that Pope John Paul VI talked about how the smoke of Satan was circulating above the Vatican. Now, I'm not picking on the Catholic Church. We've got real problems in the Protestant Church, and they've got real problems within Judaism. These satanic influences are in all the great religions of the world today. But certainly I believe Christianity is the true religion. That is why they've gone to so much trouble to infiltrate it, because you can't destroy it from without, but you can destroy it from within. And they're doing a great job of destroying the faith of so many people within the Protestant Church and of course, the Catholic Church. And there's so many Jews today who don't believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They're just Jews because they were raised as Jews, but they really don't believe in the Jewish faith. Though you were beginning to talk about Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan certainly was a man who said, "Everything I believe." The trouble is, did he believe everything that he said? And of course, if you realize that he was involved with astrology, in fact, there's a wonderful book. You'll never hear about it, but you can get it off the Amazon, as I did. It's called What Did Joan Say? It's written by Joan Quigley, who was the astrologer for the White House. And, of course, every time Nancy would go to see Joan Quigley, who was an astrologer, why, when she got back to the White House, the president would say to her, "Well, what did Joan say?" And Joan Quigley was running the affairs of state under the Reagan administration. And the fact that you've never heard that simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. The book, again, What Did Joan Say? By Joan Quigley, available on Amazon. And I've got it, I've read it, and I believe it's very, 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 very plausible, because, of course, we know that Nancy was totally dedicated to that. We have another book called The Dove Connection, going into Ronald Reagan's background, but you're never going to hear that discussed. Because he was the greatest actor of all time, the great communicator, and he said what we wanted to hear, and he made us feel good about ourselves, and a wonderful sense of humor. Go right ahead there.
Well, it's very bizarre, because how the Reagans met Joan Quigley was through Merv Griffin, who was a famous talk show host in the 70s and 80s. He just passed away a couple years ago. But Merv Griffin was a member of the Bohemian Grove, along with Ronald Reagan, which is an occult secret society which is headquartered in San Francisco and has a rural retreat in Northern California, where every year they worship an owl god. Now, if you go to WilliamHKennedy.com, you can see the film that Alex Jones took of this secret ceremony of this owl god, and with all sorts of famous people, like the Bushes and Reagan and Nixon, and all these people were members of it. But it's very, very bizarre, because people who minimize the influence of the Bohemian Grove don't realize that the Reagans met their astrologer through the Bohemian Grove.
In fact, we actually have some of the secret publications of the Bohemian Grove, and we'd be glad to send any of our listeners who want to challenge this. The front pages, it doesn't say very much. It just says picture of the owl, and then the phrase refers to the fact that they worship the owl. They worship the owl. Well, of course, that's a symbol of Moloch, 40-foot owl, where they have a feigned human sacrifice. And if you've never seen it, go to WilliamHKennedy.com, where we actually carry the excellent DVD, The Secrets of the Bohemian Grove, actually shot in the Bohemian Grove at great risk to the man who took those pictures. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest, William H. Kennedy. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and William, just pick up from there.
Well, it's very bizarre. As you said, if you go to my webpage, WilliamHKennedy.com, you can see the Time magazine article on Joan Quigley and her relationship with the Reagans, but even that doesn't mention the Bohemian Grove in it. And it's quite fascinating. Richard Nixon said that the Bohemian Grove was a homosexual organization with a different set of values. Now, I'm toning down President Nixon's language by using the term homosexual. He used a far harsher term.
And he really didn't like it, but he went there because he wanted to associate with these powerful men.
Right, that's a strange thing. Not everyone who joins these weird secret societies particularly has any spiritual or metaphysical beliefs. In fact, they might even be atheists or people who really don't care about the spiritual realm. You're just concerned with earthly power. And the only way they can get it is by joining these very bizarre groups with these very bizarre rituals. And they're actually being hoodwinked by the infernal order. You know, people will do just about anything to get money and power, even kooky occult ceremonies that they may not place a lot of value in themselves. Now, Nixon, he was another deranged person in that he used to take the advice of Gene Dixon, who was a soothsayer, who was friends with his secretary. And there are even recordings of him from the White House tapes mentioning the soothsayer Gene Dixon. And on February 20th, 2008, just, you know, in a few days, the History Channel is running a documentary called Presidential Prophecies, and you can actually hear Nixon saying this. It's very, very strange. That's an excellent documentary.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Presidential Prophecies, and it's on February 20th, 2008 on the History Channel. You can watch it for free. They're going to run it twice during the day. But this film really brings a lot of these points home, that this bizarre occultism is out there. And even Nixon, who didn't think much of the Bohemian Grove itself, certainly put a lot of stock in Gene Dixon's prophecies, and even made some policies concerning the Middle East about Gene Dixon's prophecies concerning about what was going on in the future. So decisions which are made that cost American servicemen's lives and decisions that are made concerning our economy don't actually come from our political leaders.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, William was just talking about the Bohemian Grove, and of course, most of our presidents have belonged to that. And, of course, they don't necessarily all agree with it. They may not even understand the spiritual implications, although some may, but we were simply commenting that we actually have a secret book that was published by the Bohemian Grove, was never supposed to be released to the public, and I got this one rather expensive. And there in the opening pages, there's a picture of the owl and the phrase, you know, we worship the owl. The owl, of course, is a symbol of Moloch, a 40-foot owl there where they have a feigned human sacrifice. And if you have never seen the ceremony, why, of course, you can go to William's website, WilliamHKennedy.com, and of course, you actually see the filming of this done at great personal danger to Alex Jones. Certainly, we thank him for doing that. We carry the DVD ourselves. the secrets of the Bohemian Grove. We think it's important that you understand how this occultism permeates every aspect of the elite of our country. In fact, there's this phrase in there, an interview with David Gergen, who was actually the White House counsel during the Clinton administration. He was the only Republican in the Clinton administration. And, of course, Gergen, they simply quote from an article, you see the pages there, where Gergen talked about how he had left the Bohemian Grove. He didn't go anymore because he didn't like running around naked, these people running around naked in the woods. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the leaders of our country. We're talking about the Henry Kissingers, the Rockefeller family, the presidents, the secretaries of state, running around naked in the redwoods.
It's even worse than that, Dr. Stan. A few years ago, it was uncovered that they were hiring gay porno stars to work at the Bohemian Grove. A gay porn star named Chad Savage was there. Some reporters traced him there, and he was in some very, very sick, hardcore gay films. Now, what are world leaders doing hiring hardcore gay porn film stars to work at their summer retreat?
Well, of course, they get our four-tape set, the four-CD set on the Bohemian Grove. They hear Kathy O'Brien, who was sent there by the CIA to compromise the congressmen and the senators and the world leaders. And, of course, she was under mind control at that time and, of course, was used as a prostitute to service the leaders of our country. And you'll be amazed, Grace, if you ever listen to what she has to say or read her book. We carry two of them. One is The Transformation of America. That's the trance, T-R-A-N-C-E, formation of America. The other is Access Denied. So, anyway, go ahead with it.
Well, it's very bizarre because one thing I learned, Merv Griffin, who I mentioned earlier, was a notorious homosexual, and he actually tried to get a guy named Danny Terrio, who was a dancer who used to do a show called Dance Fever in the late 1970s and early 80s during the disco craze, to go to Northern California with him for something. And Merv Griffin used to repeatedly sexually harass Danny Terrio to the point where Danny Terrio took him up on criminal charges. So you get a lot of aggressive homosexuality amongst Bohemian Grove members. And as you say, I believe a lot of this is used to compromise and control members who maybe inadvertently show up or are invited to these things. And just consider, if you're just filmed or photographed walking past a homosexual encounter, you are, you know, incriminated to a great extent. What were you doing there, even though it might not have been something you were into or something you wanted to see? Just your mere presence in one of these films, just walking by, gives the Bohemian Grove complete control over your ideas, beliefs, and policies. And I'm talking about people like George W. Bush, Helmut Kohl, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Art Linkletter. These are all Bohemian Grove members, people who control the power politics. And a lot of people in entertainment are in the Bohemian Grove. Now, one thing I learned about them that not too many people know about is there is a biography of Rudolf Valentino by Brad Steiger and a guy named Chaw Mank. And what I discovered in that book is that the Bohemian Grove infiltrated Hollywood very early on in the teens and 1920s, and they had a gay club in Hollywood called The Torch, which was run by the Bohemian Grove bankers who used to actually film major film stars and power players in early Hollywood in gay films and use it to blackmail them into doing things. And when you look at the major films that were made in the 1920s based on, like, Jack London, who was a Bohemian Grove member, all these early screenwriters in Hollywood were Bohemian Grove and Torch Club members. So the Bohemian Grove had its tentacles in Hollywood right from the beginning, right from the very first time. And a few mavericks who were in Hollywood who didn't get involved with it, like Joseph P. Kennedy and a few other people, were actually blackballed and blacklisted and harassed by the Bohemian Grove, and their films weren't given full distribution. So, I mean, they really controlled it, and anyone they couldn't control, they tried to harass out of business. And I'm talking about, like, the people in charge, like D.W. Griffith and all these early Hollywood moguls were Torch and Bohemian Club members. And if you didn't play their game, they were out to ruin you. They controlled the distribution of films in early Hollywood. And, you know, they're still huge players in Hollywood to this day. It's very, very bizarre. So the entire phenomenon of Hollywood itself is a Bohemian Grove spinoff. And as I said, I just learned that from Brad Steiger's book called Valentino, which came out in 1977 and was made into a film by Ken Russell. And Rudolph Valentino and Chau Menk themselves attended the Torch Club and may or may not have engaged in homosexual activities. But the first films in Hollywood were porn films made to blackmail movie stars, bankers, and producers in Hollywood. And anyone they didn't blackmail, they tried to ruin. So the very fabric of our film industry is a cult and controlled by the Bohemian Grove.
Well, I think there's just so much that the American people don't know. They don't know much of the material you put in your book, Satanic Crimes, about the Bilderberger Group. This group of the most wealthy and powerful people in the United States and Europe, and there are only maybe 120, 140 of them coming. There are a few of them who come all the time, Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, Lord Rothschild, the top bankers of the United States and of Europe. And they're the people who control the media and the people who control the great corporations. And there's so much of the wealth of the world is centralized in the hands of about 120 or 140 people. And certainly we know that Bill Clinton has been to the Bilderberger meetings. And of course, he went there, I believe it was in 1992. And they selected him to become the president of the United States. And they ran in 1992. And lo and behold, he was elected president. Why? Because they controlled the media. They were able to swing people behind him to create the impression. Of course, the truth about Bill Clinton was always covered up, just as the truth about Hillary Clinton. I mean, bringing, you know, a medium into the White House in 1993 to conjure up spirits is never mentioned today. I wonder why. You go right ahead.
Well, it's very bizarre you mentioned the Bilderberg Group because they were implicated in a huge pedophile scandal in the mid-90s, which never even made the papers in the state. A serial killer named Marc Dutroux was captured by the Belgian authorities, and what he was doing was kidnapping children and young girls to be used as sex slaves in satanic-type rituals by Bilderberg members. Now, what had happened was while they were prosecuting and trying Marc Dutroux, one of the judges, Jean-Marie Connerot, called for more investigation, and 10 people came forward and started identifying major Bilderbergers as being involved in satanic pedophilia. And one of the big names that came out in this, it's called the Pedophile Dossier, and you can see it at williamhkennedy.com on the Satanic Crime Multimedia page, was a fellow named Billy Klaus, who most people in the United States have never heard of. Billy Klaus was a Belgian politician who was the defense minister of Belgium, who basically caused the Rwandan genocide of the mid-90s. He inappropriately decolonized Rwanda, pulled out all of the Belgian troops at once, and allowed the competing factions there to annihilate each other, killing, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, the biggest genocide since World War II. So that's the kind of person Billy Klaus was. His name came up as being identified in various satanic ritual abuse ceremonies in the early 1960s. Now, what's even more bizarre, Billy Klaus was forced to resign as the Secretary General of NATO for taking bribes from a helicopter company. He was disgraced and forced to leave office. And just last year, now he's in his 70s now, in 2007, he appeared in a television commercial for a rock concert in Belgium, which is called Limbomania, which is a yearly huge rock festival. And what he did in this commercial is he performed a satanic candle lighting ceremony wherein he lights a candle and throws the match away, begins playing the piano, and a satanic being in flames, a fellow dressed up in a costume, comes out on fire, and he's wearing a helmet with horns with the EU flag on it, and he gives the evil eye to the audience and then runs off.
And, of course, all the flames in the background, it's obvious this is a demonic ceremony. I've seen the ad. It's really quite amazing. And here's, of course, a key player in this whole world movement. Was he ever a Bilderberger, or was he?
Yes, he was in the Bilderberg group. He attended the Bilderberg group in 1993, was his first year, before he was made Secretary General of NATO.
All right, so people find it so difficult to understand that there really are organizations that control what's going on and make mockery of the electoral process. You don't vote for the candidate of your choice. You vote for the candidates of their choice. And whichever one wins, why, their candidate always wins. Doesn't matter who's elected, their candidate's always the one in power. Because they control both the Democrats and the Republicans, and through the media they're able, of course, to push the candidacy of one candidate and suppress the candidacy of somebody who might be an American and want to preserve our Constitution.
Now, it's bizarre, Dr. Stan, when you consider that someone like Willy Klaus, you would think that after all these scandals and being, you know, identified as being involved in satanic pedophilia, that the last thing on earth he would do was be in that bizarre commercial. And that's a thing you kind of have to see to believe, and you can see it at williamhkennedy.com. It's quite stunning. It's kind of like the Tony Blair ritual in Mexico. Unless you see the source, it sounds like fantasy, but this is a very real thing. You would think that's the last thing on earth he would want to do, but as you say, it doesn't matter to these people. They control the media, they control the government, they control the economy, and they will brazenly perform satanic ceremonies on television and then have it put up on YouTube, on the internet, and really not care because they're the key power players.
And they think that they have everything under control, that they are the ultimate. Well, of course, as far as man is concerned, they would be, but I mean, this is a spiritual battle, and they haven't taken into account the influence of God, who one of these days is going to intervene. And I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. And the people of this country, of my country, the United States, are complicit in what's going on, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose.
Very true, Dr. Stan. For evil to triumph, all good men have to do is nothing. Just
right.
To, you know,
we got a lot of people are very good at that. And they sit around and complain. But, of course, when it comes to doing something, they're not willing to contribute or even to get involved in the political process and try to get responsible people elected instead of the candidates who are supported by the ruling elite.
Well, that's what's very valuable about programs like Radio Liberty. And I encourage everyone out there to go to Radio Liberty and WilliamHKennedy.com and look up some of these materials, you know, and find the hard facts behind them from the reliable sources, and just send that to three other people and ask them to do the same, because the more people who are educated and informed about these matters, the weaker these powers become. But it is a matter of spreading the word, and everyone out there can do that for free on the Internet. That's one great blessing of the Internet. So that's what I want people to do. Just go to WilliamHKennedy.com, go to the Satanic Crime Multimedia page, go to RadioLiberty.com. There's an excellent multimedia page there as well. And just find some material you find fascinating or interesting or unusual, and just send it to three other people. I strongly urge people to do that. You know, you can. This is all free material. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to register. All you have to do is go to those sites and look at these things and send it to other people. And I would love for everyone out there to do that.
Well, I think that's a great suggestion. And let me once again suggest the website, WilliamHKennedy.com. It's a beautiful website. Material there you won't find elsewhere. And you need to understand how all of these elitist organizations interlock. The Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission, the Bohemian Grove, certainly the Rosicrucians, the Theosophists, and certainly these organizations, even within the Catholic Church, are there, and within the Protestant Church. There are other comparable organizations. And the National Day of Prayer, do you know who puts that on? It's a very, very strange organization, but most people are thinking, because the president often comes to the prayer breakfast, I should say that we're talking about the prayer breakfast, that it's, you know, has the sponsorship of the president, but it really doesn't. And it's a very, very unusual organization, just one of the multitude of organizations that infiltrated the Protestant Church. Well, William, we got about a minute before we go to our next break. So what would you like to say?
Well, I would just like people out there to know that even educating yourself about this liberates you to a certain extent from the effect and the power that these people have over you. Once you're aware of it, they don't have the same kind of hold over you that you did before, and you might not even realize that they had a hold over you, but they do, and you can liberate yourself from that through education.
All right, fine. Our guest is William H. Kennedy. His website, WilliamHKennedy.com. And, of course, his book, Satanic Crimes, is the one we carry. And we'll be back in just a moment to finish with the program. You hang on there, William. We'll be right back. Well, when will that new DVD be out on the Lucifer's Lodge?
Well, Dr. Stan, I have a one-hour documentary completed, and I've had a little trouble with the sound with it. I have a sound engineer working on it now, and I'm hoping for it will be on sale by mid-April of 2008. I can't guarantee that. It depends on how much repair work needs to be done. But this is an excellent film which shows news clips, a lot of it, of satanic pedophile priests in the Roman Catholic Church. And I stitch all these together into a single narrative, and it's quite shocking to see all these cases pulled together. And that will be out in, you know, I hope a month, month and a half or so.
Well, have you come under any pressure for certainly focusing in and focusing attention on the homosexual and satanic influence within the church?
Not really, Dr. Stan, because I do a lot of things after the fact. I report on things after the mainstream media has reported on it. Now, what I do that the system doesn't like is I connect different dots, and that's what really infuriates them. But I haven't come under any political, economic, or church pressure. We're all under pressure by the man downstairs. He runs things here, Satan himself. But I undertake various religious precautions so that the devil himself really can't affect me too much. And I don't want to press religion too much on people myself. I'm not a minister or an evangelist, but I certainly encourage people to look into Christian practices for deflecting evil from their lives. And there's a ton of information on the internet about that. I encourage and I point my finger to that for people to do, but I'm not particularly one who teaches those things myself.
Well, of course, I'm sure we have thousands of people out there praying for the provision and protection of the of Radio Liberty, and we ask people to do that, and you'd be amazed how often people call and say, you know, we are praying for you regularly, and I really think that's how we're able to continue doing what we do. It's certainly not my skill or intelligence that keeps us from getting into trouble, but I really believe, of course, we're protected from the evil forces that would just love to shut down a ministry like yours or like mine. And so I'm glad you're able to persist in this, because I feel a camaraderie with the things you're doing. You certainly tend to reinforce what we're doing. And together, and the thousands of other ministries across America, but I don't know any better or more effective ministry than yours. Our guest, William Kennedy, good night. God bless.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation, if you can enjoy a conversation on an issue like this. But there really are spiritual forces out there working and trying to undermine the fabric of our society. Certainly, we carry William's book, The Satanic Crimes. We have a four-tape set, which, of course, gives us the background interviews with William Kennedy and one other gentleman. It's called Satanic Crimes. It's available in video or, pardon me, I should say, in tapes or in CDs. And, of course, it'll give you an understanding what this is about. We actually have a DVD on the Bohemian Grove. We have a four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, including my interview with Kathy O'Brien, who was sent there by the CIA. And what she has to say is, well, it's rather shocking. We carry Kathy's books, The Transformation of America. That's TRANCE, Formation of America, and Access Denied. And Kathy was a mind control victim of the CIA, sold by her father into slavery when she was 5 years old. And the stories that she has to tell are pretty incredible. I've met Kathy many times. I believe she's very believable, and she's turned into a wonderful person. But I will tell you, when I first met her, her mind was so boggled, and now she thinks so clearly. And then, of course, we carry the material on that goes into the supernatural. We have a four-tape set or four-CD set on the supernatural. And we recommend, if you're going to get that you get the book that goes with it. Because we do our interviews with Joanna Michelson. And then, of course, we carry her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. And you really are introduced to the tremendous power of those on the other side. And, of course, she was into spiritual healing. She witnessed 400 miraculous healings, and she really believed this was of God until her sister convinced her that maybe it was satanic. She went back and interviewed all these people and found out they were all demonically possessed. Their lives had been saved, but they were demonically possessed. There really is another dimension out there, and you need to become aware of it, because that's where the battle is. That's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or watch the DVD. And of course, this will be the last week. We'll be making the offer on the 25 copies of the DVD of the Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you're interested this week, fine. Otherwise, we're just going to go ahead and make them up. But we hope many of you would want to get that 25 copies of the DVD for a suggested price of $99 plus shipping. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get our DVD on The Forbidden Secret. And we've had so many good compliments on that. And remember, it's just me talking, but it puts over the idea there really is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. Through the secret societies, it has been known to many of the great men of the past, Plato, Aristotle, Alexander the Great. In fact, did you ever wonder how Alexander the Great, with an army of some 35 Macedonians, was able to take on Darius the Great with an army of 1 million, and Alexander the Great won? I mean, do you really think that was because he was such a great military genius? No. He had tapped into the other side. He had tapped into the mystery and this secret we talk about. And of course, we simply quote from a book written in the first century by Plutarch called The Life of Alexander, or The Times of Alexander. And you need to understand that this force is out there, and it is available to anyone who wants it, but you do not want that under any circumstances. The Forbidden Secret is an excellent introduction, and we carry a four-tape set or four-CD set entitled The Secret. Behind the Secret takes you into Rhonda Byrne's program. The DVD and book she's put out has been featured on Oprah Winfrey several times, and by Larry King, and of course Jim Carrey tells that this is how he's been so successful, and Ellen DeGeneres of course thinks this is really great, and people are introduced to apply the law of attraction. And of course you need to understand what it's about, and you need to understand the behind it. our powerful dark spiritual forces. Again, our number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course, for this next hour, the views of Patrick Wood of the August Review. And Patrick is one of our favorite guests. He's been around in this battle for an awful long time. During the late 1970s, he worked very closely with a friend of mine, Professor Anthony Sutton, writing books about the Trilateral Commission. Trilateralists over Washington, Part 1 and Part 2, Book 1 and Book 2 were classics at that time. And, of course, an introduction to this group of power brokers, but, of course, people did not really recognize, at least at that time, that there were deep occult or spiritual forces that were energizing this movement. And you go back and you look at their original logo, and you look very closely, you can see it's three intertwining sixes. And, of course, they've changed the logo, but not the spiritual significance today. And if you look at the new logo very carefully, it's three arrows. You look at the inside of the arrow, you can see the six, and joined together by a broken upside-down cross. I wonder why they had that symbol there. Well, now we've got Patrick Wood. We're going to be talking about the move towards a global currency and what's happening financially. Patrick, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, my pleasure, Dr. Stan. Always good to be on your show, and I appreciate the fact you still just hang in there week after week and tell people what's going on.
Well, of course, what a privilege it is to have a voice in times like this. And, we put the information out. I figure God's going to determine who's going to hear about us and whether they can hear us on shortwave or on the Internet or radio or satellite. It's all there. We just need people listening. So, but anyway, Chris, I appreciate the fact that you're there and working with the August Review, and you've got a great website, great articles, and I was impressed by one of your recent articles on the world financial situation. So why don't you pick up the story?
Oh boy, Dr. Stan, we've talked about economics and monetary issues and stuff before, and we've warned people that the subprime crisis was just the tip of the iceberg, and this is in the spite of our Treasury Secretary telling us everything's just fine, and presidents of banks and stuff telling us, no, we're not going to be in a recession, no, there's no risk on commercial real estate and so on. And yet, the news that's coming out right now, just little signs of cracks in the dike, the credit implosion that started with the subprime crisis is continuing to collapse and has a long, long way to go before it hits bottom. And there's just, Wall Street, certain sectors of Wall Street are in absolute panic right now. The Federal Reserve is in absolute panic right now. And, my guess is around the world that you know, that there's many smaller banks, especially, that are in absolute, crisis mode right now. And we'll have an hour here, perhaps, on your show to kind of expand this, you know, what's specifically what I'm talking about. But I think anybody that has a savings account in a bank, I don't care if it's a big bank or a little bank, anybody has a savings account needs to be really paying attention to this show, because the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, which insures your deposits, is making rather dramatic moves right now to handle a large amount of bank failures across our country. This is critical news at this point.
And, of course, it's not simply the mortgage loans. It's the student loans they're afraid about, the credit card bonds. That they've made so many things into bonds. Student loans into bonds? I mean, you know, credit cards into bonds? I mean, automobiles, payments into bonds? And they're all throughout the world, and nobody knows which ones are, you know, legitimate and which ones are going to totally collapse. We'll be right back with Patrick Wood. Well, Patrick, go ahead and pick the story up.
Well, as I started to say, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is our safety net with the banks, in case a bank goes under, the FDIC steps in and pays off the depositors the amount of money that they would have lost had they just lost their savings account. Those accounts get insured for up to $100,000 maximum. And FDIC, over a period of years, it acts like an insurance company. It keeps somewhat less than in reserve, less than one half of 1% of the potential deposits out there, because, you know, you figured 20 years ago you wouldn't have more than an occasional bank go out of business, and so the FDIC had no problem. The FDIC has nowhere near the amount of money available, nor the expertise to manage it, with the financial tsunami that's coming at it right now. In fact, historically, the FDIC has never supervised a bank failure which exceeded 175,000 accounts. Yet today, there are some of the larger banks themselves have 50 million depositors. And the FDIC recently, just this last week, released a statistics that there were 65 banking institutions with a total of assets of $18.5 billion that are currently on their list of problem institutions. They won't give the names of who those banks are. Unfortunately, we don't know. Wouldn't we like to know, but they won't tell us. Those combined 65 institutions alone, and this number is growing rapidly, by the way, that number alone would tell you that that the FDIC is going to be absolutely swamped and bankrupted if there's multiple bank failures at the same time, coming up in the next several months. It's a huge story. Nobody's really covering it right now. I doubt that there'll be any much mainline press covering it, but it's a huge story. Listeners can go to FDIC.gov and look at their website. It's not worth much, but you can go there and look at it. They released this some of the details of what they're doing, and this is just a little thing to them that they put up, but it has huge implications in the financial markets.
And of course, people think that, well, I have my money in the bank, and it's guaranteed by the government. But the trouble is, FDIC doesn't have that much money, and since they never had to pay off a lot of, bank failures, they've been able to get by. But what happens if large numbers of banks begin to collapse? And this is the fear. And of course, if they do, there's just not going to be enough money to pay them all off. We'll be right back. Well, Patrick was just talking about the Federal Deposit Insurance Company that guarantees your bank deposits up to $100,000. The trouble is that they're worried because they don't have enough money. If enough banks collapse, they're not going to have enough money to pay off all the depositors. And so, basically, the way it works is they don't have to pay the deposit off right away. They can pay them back every 6 months or every year or every 2 years or so. They can drag this out, and you're not going to be able to get your money, and yet you've got to pay your bills. And this is the difficulty that there is. Of course, the government can go ahead and simply print the money, but that's highly inflationary. Everybody in the world is worried about inflation. The Arab countries are running 6%, 6.5% inflation. That's why they're talking about breaking their relationship to the American dollar. Same thing is happening in South America. 6 or 8% inflation in those countries are representing the inflation we're having in this country. And believe me when they tell you that our inflation rate's only 2 or 3%. Are you going to believe what they say, or are you going to believe your lying eyes? Well, I would believe your lying eyes and realize that they are simply lying to you about what's going on. They have to lie because, of course, if they told the truth and they told the people that there was a 10% inflation rate, then they'd have to give the people of Social Security a 10% increase every year because Social Security is tied to inflation, and, of course, they don't have the money to do it. So they have to lie. And you have to understand it's for the greater good. That's why they lie to us. Because they're so much smarter than we are, and after all, they're giving us all that money in Social Security, and it is a welfare system for the elderly. It has nothing to do with a fund, because there is no fund. They've spent the money for future generations, and when those people retire, they don't know what they're going to do. Go right ahead, Patrick.
Well, exactly, and I would want to, before we go on, I'd want to offer your listeners a website. There's only one rating service left in America that's not completely bought off by the financial community that depends on the ratings, and that happens to be a company. The website is www.weissratings. It's WEISS and then the word ratings, RATINGS.com. And everybody with a bank account needs to go to that website and determine the rating of their bank. In other words, the amount of capital that's available, the financial stability of that bank compared to the loans that they have out and the loan exposure they have. And if you're not in a B-plus to an A-rated bank or higher, you need to close your account with a lesser-rated bank and immediately move to a more safe bank that isn't in so much jeopardy going out of business. That's WeissRatings.com. And I think there may be a small charge for some of their reports, but some of the stuff is available for free. And I have no interest in Weiss Ratings, by the way, other than the fact that I've known Martin Weiss for 30 years or so. He does a great job, and he's got one of the best independent rating services, actually the only at this point, in the country.
And, of course, that's rating of the banks and whether or not they're going to be able to survive or not. And
that's
right. A lot of these banks have far more debts than they have assets. And, of course, what's happening is the banks only are required to keep about 8% of the money on reserves, and the rest of it they lend out. And, of course, they can lend out six or eight times their actual deposits or the amount of money they have in reserves. But what happens with, of course, what they've invested in loans, they've lent money on loans that are not going to be repaid. What happens, of course, if they've lent money to people who just are not going to have the incomes? Or with the falling prices of houses, you can even have people who, what they call AAA rated loans. But, if you are paying, making payments on a house that's worth $1 million when you bought it, and now that house is worth $800,000, are you going to continue paying on that house? Or are you going to walk away and try to get a cheaper house? And I think that's going to happen increasingly, even with people who have lots of money, as the price of homes across America continues dropping. And, of course, we saw what happened in Japan back in 1990, 1991, when property values went down 90%. I don't know whether they go down that far here, but we know that they're dropping in some parts of the country. And, of course, if they're not dropping in your part, why, of course, they will if the homes don't sell. And I know here where I live, prices haven't come down, but the property isn't selling, and sooner or later people are going to start dropping the price, and then it's going to be everybody competing to try to get out with whatever they can get. So pick up the story there, Patrick.
Exactly right. You mentioned along the way there insurance companies and rating services, and that brings me to key point number two, and what's in my mind tonight, and that is just last week, one of the largest rating services called Fitch Ratings, it announced that it's probably going to cut the ratings on the five main bond insurers that insure these collateralized loans, these they're called collateralized debt obligations, or CDOs for short. And these are the main insurers that that allow these CDOs to be, you know, foisted on investors. If they have their AAA ratings cut, that means that the banks will almost immediately lose, have to downgrade another $70 to $100 billion in capital because of just in the drop of the rating alone. But Fitch Ratings now sees that the insurance companies are in big trouble because they have insured these bond portfolios, these securitized assets. And there's no way, collectively, there's no way that these companies can absorb the kind of hit if they if defaults continue to rise as it is. And currently, the market for CDOs is somewhere over $2 trillion. That's a large amount of money, by the way, but it's not, you know, it's a large amount of money. It's nothing compared to point three that we want to talk about tonight. But there's some $2 trillion out there in just pure CDOs. Most of them are turning to junk, and where they have just virtually no value whatsoever. But the bond insurers are about to get hit with a number of claims for payment against these, you know, defaulted loans. And so it's kind of like having about 10 times New Orleans disaster at the same time with Hurricane Katrina. It'd be like having New Orleans, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Miami, Florida, all get hit at the same, you know, the same time with you know, that kind of a disaster.
And of course, the insurance companies would not have the money to make the payments that there would be.
Well, they don't. They're in the same position that the FDIC is. They don't possibly have the money. Yet they made these contracts with these banks along the way, figuring that there'd be, you know, financial nirvana forever. And now that the market has turned south like a house of cards, everything is starting to come unglued. It's coming unglued with unprecedented rate right now. In fact, I was going to save this for just a bit later, but last week, one of the reasons, one of the big days when the market crashed last week was that the service sector in our country, which is measured by the Supply Management Index, it plummeted in January. I mean, it just fell like a rock. It had the biggest drop in its 10-year history. And it indicates that the service sector in our country has basically just been cut by two-thirds, that people just stopped spending money. And service companies just stopped hiring people, and they stopped spending money. And so it appears that, at least in January, that the consumer engine that has driven globalism for the last 10 years is coming to a screeching halt. And this is going to have repercussions everywhere because the income streams that keep the credit afloat are drying up at an unprecedented rate. It's like having the lake go dry, that last bucket of water that goes, you know, that goes up in evaporation or down the drain that, you know, that allows your city to drink water. That's going to be how dramatic it is when the income dries up on these huge companies that, you know, rely on that income in order to keep the whole house of cards floating at the same time.
And of course, when we hear, for instance, sales were only up 1% last month, you have to understand, well, that's up 1%, but inflation is running probably, well, officially 3 to 4%, and realistically 10%. So if your sales are up 1%, why, of course, you're really falling behind. But the average individual doesn't understand this. They can't think. You know, they think that money is solvent. Money is solid. It has inherent value, but is losing value rapidly because of inflation. And once again, inflation has nothing to do with rising prices. It has to do with increasing the money supply. And the government is frantically increasing the money supply. In fact, their solution to what's going on is to give everybody $300 or $600, something like that, or most people in the country. We're going to pump $168 billion into the economy, thinking that somehow is going to rescue this whole thing. And our problem is not a matter of liquidity. There's all this money out all over the world. It's a matter of solvency, of our banking and institutions, our monetary institutions, of the hedge funds, of the pension funds, they're all on the verge of insolvency because of the all these CDOs and ABSs and SIVs, and they got all these crazy names out there, but they're all faulty bonds that pretty, of course, are insolvent. And when they become insolvent, then the institutions that hold them become insolvent.
Well, let me give an example to some of the real life stuff that's going on out there, just so your listeners can understand. Not too long ago, the Massachusetts Secretary of State sued Merrill Lynch with fraud and misrepresentation charges for selling the state a package of CDOs that was worth $13.9 million. And so the Attorney General sued Merrill Lynch for selling risky investments to their state that was unsuitable for one of the cities that existed within the state. And they were supposed to, by law, only buy AAA-rated bonds, and somehow they got away selling this stuff. So Merrill Lynch got sued, and they settled, by the way, for 100% of the court. They settled out of court for 100% of what they were sued for.
Hole, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, of course, we know that Merrill Lynch is in real trouble, and Bear Stearns is in trouble, and Morgan Stanley is in real trouble, and Citicorp, the largest bank in America, is in real trouble, and Bank of America is in real trouble, and most of our major banks are in trouble, but a lot of our smaller banks are in trouble, too.
Well, exactly. They really are. The lawsuit against Merrill Lynch, by the way, the city of Springfield in Massachusetts, which was the plaintiff in this case, they had been sold a package of $13.9 million based on these CDOs. Those CDOs are presently valued at $1.2 million. Now, what that means is, in the course of 1 year, less than a year actually, that the city of Springfield experienced a loss of 90% of their original investment. From $13.9 million to $1.2 million, 90%. That's, you know, if it wasn't the only money they had, by the way, but, you know, if they had invested heavily in this, the city of Springfield could have been bankrupted overnight by this kind of a loss. And yet, there are cities, states, pension funds, 401k programs, etc., mutual funds around this country, and banks, that are heavily invested in these same CDOs. But you see, the value doesn't get marked down until you try to sell them. And when you go to sell them today, you find that there's no buyers, so they have to simply write it down on the books.
Somebody asked what a CDO was. That's a collateralized debt obligation. Could you explain that for our listeners?
Collateralized debt obligation.
Right, but what is that, just for our listeners who are not acquainted with these terms?
Absolutely. What a CDO is where a large company, like let's just take Countrywide Financial. A lot of people have money with your loans with Countrywide. Countrywide goes out and originates, say, 1,000 loans. And they take those 1,000 loans, it's worth several million dollars, and they take those loans and they offer them to a brokerage house, like an investment broker, to wrap those loans up in an instrument that can be turned around and sold as stock. And the investors that would pay money for this stock are promised the income stream that comes off of you making payments to this entity.
Now, is that a stock or is that a bond?
Well, either way you look at it, they call it a collateralized debt obligation. It's a bond, but it also has asset value, kind of an asset value to it as well.
Right.
Because it's based on the income stream that gets paid to the investors who would put money into it. And it's kind of a hybrid type of an investment. It's not really a pure bond. It's not really a pure stock either. But the key is these CDOs depend on the income stream. And if people start defaulting on their mortgages, the income starts to dry up. The only value a CDO has is the income. They don't take their value from your actual real estate that underlies it, but they take it on the income that comes off of the those assets. So if you're if 20% of the people stop paying, 20% of the income is lost to the investors who have these CDOs. And the lower interest rates go, of course, just in general, the lower the valuation is going to be on the remaining amount of income. So you see drops like 90% in the value and the principal value of a CDO in less than a year, because the income dropped, people started defaulting and so on. The income dropped. Maybe they lost a bond rating along the way.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Patrick Ward of the August Review. And we'll tell you later how to get to his website. And he was just explaining what CDOs are. Collateralized debt obligations, they're simply mortgages that are put into the form of a bond or a stock and sold based upon the income of the people paying on their mortgages. And then that income flow goes to the people who bought the bond. And, of course, if it was a AAA bond where people were going to pay their monthly mortgage payment, that would be fine. But what happens when people don't pay their mortgage payment? Well, then that means the bond is really worth less. And if enough people quit paying their mortgage payment, why, the price will drop precipitously. And then as the price of the homes that they bought begins to fall, people begin to walk away from those homes and say, why should I be making payments on a house that's worth only 60 or 70% or 80% of what I paid for it? And as people walk away from that, then of course there's less and less payments, and the value of the bond falls. And that's what a collateralized debt obligation is. It's a debt obligation, and there's a collateral behind it, which is a home, but its value is only there as long as people are paying. And a lot of these people, subprime purchasers who never should have been able to get the house because they bought them with no money down. Were you able to buy your house with no money down? Of course not. I mean, you had to have a good income. They had to verify your income. Well, they weren't worried about the incomes. And people who had no income, terrible credit ratings, were able to buy homes. And then we wonder why they're defaulting on their payments. Go right ahead.
Well, that's exactly right. This policy of easy credit can be laid directly at the feet of the former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan. Now, this was his policy, and it was under his watch completely. And we don't have to go into this in great detail, but it was under his watch and under his supervision that these banking policies were allowed to really take hold. Secondly, another thing we'll talk about in just a bit here, which is important, we're going to talk about the derivative market. The derivative market that banks created and are involved in is completely off the balance sheet of the banks that operate in that market. That means the banks have escaped the reserve requirement altogether. There's no regulation of the derivative market whatsoever like there is of the regular banking market in our country. And Alan Greenspan allowed that loophole. And basically, the banks that wanted to escape regulation by the Fed were able to completely escape in the derivative market. And we'll talk about the detail in just a little bit, but that market now, the derivative market, has grown to over $450 trillion worldwide, Dr. Stan.
$450 trillion, that's getting up into real thing. That's real money out there.
We're talking some real money now.
Right, and I think the combined value of all the money in the world is about $45 trillion. And is that about, have you heard that figure, something like that, $45 trillion?
Well, you mean of money or of derivatives?
No, money. No, derivatives are about 10 times that.
Exactly. That's about right. And the amount of risk that we're facing with the derivative market right now is at least three or four times larger than the size of the U.S. economy.
Right.
Just within the derivative markets. Absolutely amazing. And as I said, the whole thing is coming down like a house of cards right now. It's imploding upon itself. And virtually everybody underneath it is just running scared. You know, one of our courageous government officials, few as they are, is the comptroller of the currency, a gentleman by the name of John Dugan. And John Dugan has been running around for the last 2 years telling people that the United States is in horrible, just horrible shape, and to basically, we need to run for the hills and take dramatic political action. I don't know how they haven't muzzled this guy.
Now, what's his relationship to David Walker? Who's that?
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead.
But in any case, you know, he's been watching the banking institutions and stuff, you know, for some time. And, you know, his conclusion right now is that the commercial real estate market is following the residential real estate market straight off the cliff. And he himself is saying that this will be the next shoe to drop in the financial meltdown, commercial real estate.
Well, of course, there are an awful lot of people who put in these large developments, and they've done very well up until now, but a lot of them, they've got them in there, and there's nobody in them. In other words, they're waiting for the housing developments to take place, and they're sitting there, and every month they have to pay the interest on the money they borrowed to build them, and you know, these things start to fall. I mean, lots of places, way overbuilt, nobody to rent the commercial real estate. And then what do? I mean, you got a $100 million project and no takers, and you're putting out, you know, interest maybe at 10% every month. Before long, of course, people have to make panic sales. Well, Patrick, you were telling us about this. Is it John Dugan?
Yes, he's the comptroller of the currency.
All right, go ahead.
That's not like the Secretary of the Treasury. He's the comptroller of the treasury,
okay,
of the currency. And one statistic that he released just recently says, and this is a direct quote from him, more than 60% of Florida banks have commercial real estate loans worth more than 300% of their capital. Think about that for a minute. More than 60% of Florida banks have commercial real estate loans worth more than 300% of their capital. And that level, by the way, automatically, that is an automatic trigger for examiners to come in and you know, send representatives in to watch them like a hawk on their day-to-day operations. It's huge. And Dugan himself is forecasting a steep increase in bank failures for this year, next year. This is not like a private economist. This is the controller of our currency.
Well, of course, what they're going to do is they're going to just keep churning out more money. I mean, trying to get that money out, increasing liquidity, but it's not a matter of liquidity.
Well,
it's about a solvency.
They can't increase. The net liquidity is collapsing, like a hot air balloon that's been stuck, you know, been ripped at the top. They're trying to inflate, but they can't. It's like if you get a flat tire on the highway, and you know, some things you can recover from. A puncture thing, a nail, you can recover pretty quickly from. Sometimes a nail doesn't even take you down. But if you get a tear in your sidewall, you can't put enough air into the stem valve on your tire to ever reflate that tire. You could do it 100 years and it's not going to reflate the tire because you can't repair a rip on the side of your tire. And that's exactly what's happening in the credit market worldwide right now, including in our country. Credit is deflating faster than the Fed can create credit. So we have a massive net loss of credit on a global basis and in our country as well. And $150 bailout loan, you know, bailout program or whatever they call it, you know, give $600 to people, it's nuts. It's like putting one puff of air into a tire that's just desperately flat. It won't work. And the derivative market, which we ought to hit on just a bit here, the derivative market, they don't know nobody knows the full risk of this yet. But the derivative market deserves to collapse 100%. It's the stupidest market that was ever created in the face of the planet, worse than tulips in Holland.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Patrick Wood. And Patrick, before we go on, I want you to get your website out there so people can know how to get in touch with you.
Well, certainly, Dr. Stan. It's www.augustreview.com. August like the month, and the word review. And welcome to have everybody here. We deal with globalization, globalism, and so on, but We're also dealing with financial issues because it's very important on a global basis, and it's affecting us in a major way in our country right now as well. It's just it may well be leading to not just a recession, but to a depression. And my personal opinion is it's going to be a deflationary depression, not an inflationary depression. I would gladly swap my position, because an inflationary depression would be much less damaging to our country than a deflationary depression would.
All right, fine. Well, let's, of course, to get back. You were talking about the derivative market. And the derivatives, of course, are these. They're really like bets. They're really like an insurance policy. Let's imagine I'm going to buy a bond, a $10 million bond, and I want to be sure that I'm going to get the regular payments on that bond, the interest that I assume is due to me. Well, I mean, I can't be absolutely certain of that. In fact, the bond may not even be a very good bond. But, of course, I have to have a triple A rating. And so along comes the derivative writer. They may be a bank, they may be, but usually they're one of these insurance companies like ACA or AMPAC or MBIA or some of the others. And they're going to pay me money to, I'm going to pay them money for an insurance policy so that I'll be sure to get my 5 or 6 or 7% interest on that bond. And that's a pretty good deal for me. I'm going to get my regular payment. It's going to cost me a certain amount, but I'm quite willing to put it out. But what happens if the people who've taken my money don't have any money to back up the bond payment of my 7% interest on my $10 million bond? So that is what derivatives are all about. And the people who have written the derivatives don't have the money to stand behind their commitment. So pick up the story there.
Well, that's exactly right. And the next thing that that investors and analysts are beginning to look at are the insurance companies themselves that have issued these policies. And the scam that happened with Merrill Lynch in Springfield, Massachusetts, goes something like this. They took a package of CDOs and they put it together in an investment package to sell to somebody, $13.9 million. Then they went to an insurance company and got a guarantee on the insurance company that, by the way, the insurance company had a AAA rating. So the insurance company slapped a policy on it and essentially brought the rating up on the CDO to AAA. That's how they talked to the city into buying these CDOs. Well, what happens when you do that, the CDO becomes only as good as the insurance policy is guaranteeing it. Now rating companies and analysts are starting to look at the insurance companies and they're saying, what on earth have you done? And, so all of a sudden, I mean, we've been talking about this, and all of a sudden, you see Fitch Ratings, for instance, starting to get really nervous about the AAA rating that these insurance companies have had for the last 50 years. And they're saying these guys are just diving right off the edge. It's risky stuff. And so this morning, in Europe, it would be February 12 there now, in Europe, the International Herald Tribune just released a story called, the title is AIG, that's American International Group or something like that. AIG, the largest insurance company in the world, by the way, acknowledges accounting flaws and raises losses to $5 billion. That's straight off their capital, folks. And so this has sent AIG stock down 12% in one day, by the way. And reading through the story, the reason it's taking this hit of $5 billion is because of insuring CDOs. This is specifically why. They can't afford the losses, so they have to take a write-down. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is just one insurance company, and this is the first round of acknowledgement that they are being hurt by this very same thing. So they're taking off as a first-round loss, $5 billion. Well, we saw the banks do this. Last year, we saw the little trickle of write-downs come out from J.P. Morgan and Merrill Lynch and the rest of them. And then those little write-downs all of a sudden get bigger and bigger, and then all of a sudden we see Citigroup, which owns Citibank, desperate for cash, All of a sudden you see a massive capital infusion and directly into stock from the king of Dubai. I called him up on the phone, I guess, and said, hey, we're a little short on capital here. Can you give us some money? And the guy gave him like $10 billion, bought 5% of the company. So the little tip of the iceberg here with $5 billion, my guess is before this is done, the insurance companies are going to get hit worse than the investment houses have been hit already.
Now, I assume this is because the insurance companies are, insurance companies make money, they get our money, and then they have to invest it in something, and so they invested it in these collateralized debt obligations, or the asset-backed securities, or the structured investment vehicles, all of these different types of bonds that are out there. They're going to get a good income on that, and that's going to be a part of their capital to meet, claims in case they have a problem. There's a big tornado or hurricane in Florida, and they have to pay a lot of claims. But now suddenly realize that the things that they've invested in aren't worth very much. Would that be a fair statement? And suddenly they're very worried that their investments that they thought were solvent have not solvent, and here the insurance companies that are protecting us suddenly find that they don't have the capital that they thought they had.
Well, that's exactly right. And of course, they had, at the beginning of this, they had plenty of capital. They were making lots of money and paying dividends, and everything was good, looking pretty good for them. But when the credit bubble began to collapse, all of the write-downs and asset values that had to be taken were applied directly against their net capital. In other words, that's like their seed corn to a farmer. It goes right off the bottom line and goes to the capital. So if somebody like an insurance company had capital of, say, $100 billion, and all of a sudden they're writing off $10 billion here and $10 billion there, well, that $100 billion in capital starts going down to $90 billion, $80 billion, $60 billion, $50 billion, and so on. And that means that their entire insurance operation has to be scaled back by a factor of about 10 or 15 times greater than the amount of capital that they lost. And so, in other words, they have to pull in their horns big time. They have to pay off debts, but now they can't even afford to write new business. It's a terrible predicament to put themselves in, but they did. And so now the insurance companies, which are the lender or the payee of last resort, the insurance companies, everybody's starting to realize they don't have even remotely close to the money to pay off these things, to be guaranteeing them in the first place. They just don't have it. Nor can they go out and borrow money to cover loans, because that's their safety valve. For an insurance company like AIG, if they get a claim from some CDO for $100 million and they don't have $100 million, what they traditionally do is they go out in the market and borrow it and pay off the insurance claim, figuring that they're going to, take care of the debt later. Well, the problem right now is the credit market has dried up. So AIG can't go to the market spigot right now and say, give me $100 million at will, because maybe investors will and maybe they won't. In the past couple of months, though, investors basically have said, you can take all your stuff and just put it somewhere else. We don't want it.
And
we just
the
don't
thing
want
is, they're just afraid that if they were to lend AIG money, AIG might not be able to pay them back, because they don't know whether AIG
is
solvent or not. And AIG will not admit that it's insolvent, and I'm not suggesting it is. It's just an example, because it's certainly one of the largest insurance companies in the world. But nobody knows who's solvent and who is insolvent. And would you really want to lend them a lot of money, like Bank of America lent Countrywide $2 billion? And, of course, eventually, Bank of America, rather than lose their $2 billion, had to buy Countrywide for $4 billion more. And then, of course, they're going to have to absorb all of Countrywide's potential losses down the line. We have no idea how much that's going to be. But it could be that suddenly Bank of America has an albatross around his neck. Nobody knows, and everybody's afraid to talk about it.
Exactly right. And the so-called derivative markets, which is based on an investment vehicle called credit default swaps. They're very complex and esoteric financial transactions, but they're used as an insurance against default on a loan. And basically what it does is it takes two people and puts, a buyer and a seller, and puts them together. One party guarantees or writes like an insurance policy, pays the premium on it, that that particular debt won't be defaulted on. And this market has grown, as we said, to a total of $450 trillion worldwide. This is so much money, it's just hard to imagine how much $450 trillion is.
Because there's not that much money in the world, that's the trouble.
There isn't. There isn't that much money in the world, in the total world. And some economists, analysts have put the real credit risk of all these derivatives is somewhere around maybe $30 trillion. But even still, if you say, well, it's somewhere between $30 trillion and $450 trillion, that means that the credit risk on the CDS market is between 2 and 6 times the size of the U.S. economy. You can't conceive that much. We're a big country. When I say between two and six times larger than the U.S. economy, that means the entire gross national product of this country in a single year. It's potentially 6 times larger than our entire economy. And the risk is this derivative market collapses, it will wreak devastation on the banking community, the whole credit community, the insurance community. They're going to have just wreckage of companies when it's all done. And this is one reason why the FDIC right now is running scared. They see the tsunami coming. This is another reason why our Comptroller General of the currency, John Dugan, is forecasting for this year a quote. This is a quote, direct quote from him, an increase in bank failures. They know what's happening. They see it coming. It's not just the handwriting on the wall at this point. It's simply recognizing that the emperor is naked. Everything else is in place. The emperor, in fact, is naked. Somebody just has to stand up and say, the emperor's naked. And then everybody's going to go, oh my gosh, he really is. And, when people start saying this about the insurance companies and about the banks and so on, they're basically going to be just recognizing all at the same time, this whole house of cards is coming down, folks. The whole thing is coming down this time.
And of course, there's no way, really, way out of it, because we have this massive debt bubble, and of course, suddenly we've got to get rid of all this debt and credit back to something that has some relationship to solvency, and either that, or of course, you're going to have runaway inflation and the destruction of the value of the currency. Now, what's so interesting is that Ben Bernanke is simply inflating our economy and inflating the currency and going to produce increasing inflation in this country. Europe is refusing to go along with that. They don't want, of course, inflation. I don't know how they're going to handle this thing, but apparently there was a big meeting in Tokyo this last weekend, and there was a division between the people in America wanted Europe to start pouring money out into the economy. They've already put over a trillion dollars into the economy in Europe, and they said, we're not going to put any more in there. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens as suddenly the United States and its European allies begin to diverge in their economic policies.
Well, the interesting thing, I watch the markets every day, the stock markets around the world, and it's not enough just to watch the United States market. You need to watch Europe, all the countries in Europe. You need to watch Asia and Hong Kong, Japan. And what you'll find if you go to cnn.money.com, and they have a page on there that shows you all the world markets at the same time. And if you look at the world markets today, they're all moving in the same direction at the same time, almost on a daily basis. And so if you see a 3 or 4% drop in all the European markets and Asian markets, then you'll see a similar drop in the United States market on a given day. For the first time in history, all the markets of the world are moving together in the same direction. This is a byproduct of globalization, of financial globalization. These financial banks, these large financial institutions, have successfully tied together all of the stock markets in the world, all of the banking operations in the world, all of the credit markets and currency markets in the world into more or less a single financial system. And so we see the market worldwide undulating in the same direction at the same time. This has never happened before in history. And so it's not just us. It's the whole world is having trouble with this.
Somebody just called and wants to know the difference between an inflationary depression and a deflationary depression. Would you like to, could you cover that quickly?
Quickly, very quickly I could. An inflationary depression is one where economic activity recedes, but currency, the amount of currency in circulation and credit circulation goes up, and consequently prices rise during the business activity and being in a slump. A deflationary depression is the same fall in economic activity, but you have falling prices at the same time. So that's the opposite of inflation. If you have a deflation, it means if you pay $100 for something today, a couple of months from now you might only pay $95 for the same thing.
And really what it represents, of course, is that there's a shortage of currency. In other words, the government begins to contract the money supply, taking money out of circulation. And, of course, really it's what the Fed does. If the Fed is increasing the money supply, you have inflation. If the Fed is decreasing the money supply, you have deflation. But, of course, at the same time, you can have a depression as far as the economy is concerned.
And I probably the good example of that is the Great Depression in 1929, which was caused directly by the banks withdrawing credit from the marketplace. They closed off credit to people who invested in the stock market, forced stocks to be sold to pay off credit loans or margin calls, and that spiraled down into a deflationary depression that lasted many years and just virtually destroyed our country for a long period of time.
And every time, of course, the economy started to right itself, why, they pulled more money out of circulation. It was all created. You read, Sidney, the writings of some of the great economists, they will tell you it was all created by the Federal Reserve System. But, of course, we can't tell the American people that the government would bring all that suffering on us, but the truth of the matter is that they did. Well, Patrick, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me on tonight. It used to be that America was known, its fame in the world was known for its production, for its manufacturing capability. We were the engine of the global economy in that sense, that we were the greatest producing manufacturing country on the face of the planet. Your listeners know this isn't the case anymore. We've lost most of our manufacturing. And today, our only place in the world is guaranteed not by what we produce, but by what we consume. And we're buyers of stuff from everywhere in the world, mostly China, of course, and other countries like India, perhaps. But when America stops buying stuff, then the other countries in the world that produce stuff for us, that manufacture, they know that they're in deep doo-doo. Because we stop buying stuff, it's going to take them down with us. And we have the possibility for a global deflation or a global depression. It's the first time in history. There's never been a global depression any time in the history of the world. But we have the chance today to have a global depression where all the countries of the world that are hooked in with us and so on will be going down at the same time. In other words, there's going to be no place to run.
And if anybody would like to verify the story of the Great Depression, it's in a book called Capitalism and Freedom by Milton Friedman, where he tells you that the Federal Reserve System created the Great Depression. No question at all. But we can't let the American people realize that this was done intentionally and all that suffering was, it was done inflicted on the American people. But, of course, some people, the Bernard Baruchs and the others, the capitalists, the financiers, did very, very well. And while there was no money at all to, of course, give and put into the economy in the United States, we were shipping loans to Adolf Hitler, shipping loans to Stalin. The Federal Reserve could provide of financing for the communist nations and the Nazi nations in the mid-30s, but no money for the United States. And people have to ask yourself why. Well, I guess this evening has been Patrick Wood of the August Review, augustreview.com, www.augustreview.com. Fascinating articles. In fact, a couple of fascinating articles you must have posted just recently, did you, Patrick?
Yes, I did. We've been watching the financial situation very closely. And, you know, that has to do with the international banking community, the big insurance companies, and so on. And we're just really captivated by watching history unfold right before us.
Now, I'm going to have to say goodbye. Good night. God bless. We'll talk to you later. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is, of course, has been Patrick Wood. And I hope you enjoyed it. AugustReview.com. Patrick is reliable. And we actually carry a book on the Trilateralists that was written by Professor Sutton, The Trilateralists Over Washington. I think you can get up on Patrick's website. I don't know whether there's a charge for it or not, but we do have a book on the Trilateral Commission written by Professor Sutton sometime later, after he and Patrick were no longer working together. Of course, we actually have my interview with Professor Sutton, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. It's available on video or DVD, pointing out how we financed communism and socialism since their inception, but we can't let the American people know that. Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, an excellent source of information on how we financed communism. My pamphlet on the Communist-Capitalist Alliance, phrase used by Solzhenitsyn, includes a speech given by Solzhenitsyn, totally suppressed by the American media. We couldn't let the American people know that we were financing communism. Speech given by Professor Sutton to the Republican National Convention in 1972, going into how we financed the communists. We financed the North Vietnamese indirectly all during the Vietnam War. We financed the North Vietnamese who were killing our boys in South Vietnam by funding Russia that was funding the North Vietnamese, and the ships that were carrying the goods to Vietnam were all certainly made with American technology and American-made trucks. Of course, they were made in Russia at Gorky. They were Ford motor trucks. Were being, of course, shaken down the Ho Chi Minh Trail to carry the weapons that were being to kill our boys. You really need to read that speech. We've included it in its entirety in our pamphlet, The Communist-Capitalist Alliance. And then, of course, if you want to know how American corporations actually built the war machinery for Adolf Hitler before the World War II and during World War II. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, during World War II, why, of course, we were American corporations for building the weapons for Adolf Hitler, but we can't let the American people know that any more than we can let them understand that we're funding Russia today, and we're funding the division over there in Russia that's providing nuclear technology to Iran. Why would you do something like that? Russia has, you know, something like $440 billion of reserves, and we're having to borrow $2 billion a day just to meet our obligations, and yet we're funding Russia, scientists in Russia who are working at institutes that are providing nuclear technology to Iran. We're selling, of course, both Syria and Saudi Arabia sophisticated weapons that will one day be used against American forces over there when the impending war comes along. Ladies and gentlemen, nothing makes any sense unless you understand the spiritual forces that are energizing everything. Let me suggest you call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 and get the books, The Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, our pamphlet on the Communist-Capitalist Alliance, our video interview with Professor Sutton before he passed away, video or DVD, and then, of course, the book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, we carry still, going into the background of how we funded the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. But our boys fought valiantly, but they were never allowed to win. It was a no-win war. Incidentally, if you haven't read my December newsletter, you need to get a copy of that. It's a speech given by Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, who commanded the coalition forces in Iraq from June of 2003 to June of 2004, and he makes it quite clear. Iraq is a no-win war. We're not allowed to win. Our boys fight and bleed and suffer and die, but they'll never be allowed to win over there. Read what he said last October and ask yourself, why wasn't this really reported by the media? And didn't you try to find a copy of his speech anyplace? We did eventually find it. It took me an hour up on the Internet, and then it was almost illegible when we got it. But that's our December newsletter. You'll certainly want to get that. And our teller would be glad to send you a free copy. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.